listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
The one thing we have to recognize that is true of New Testament biblical Christianity is that it embraces hope and never embraces despair.
I think thinking about the church not so much as an army engaged in war, as a community engaged in protest.
Apologetics is demonstrating that the proclamation of law and gospel itself is embedded in history.
The reason why we say that the Lord's Supper forgives sins, that baptism forgives sins, that absolution forgives sins, is because Jesus promised that those things forgive sins.
Amateur home improvers in Italy, love issues, etc.
There's a lot of talk about the Equality Act nowadays. Many of our politicians are gung-ho for it. Our president certainly appears to be. I guess at least the blue politicians are gung-ho for it. Others are very deeply concerned. But the very same politicians who are gung-ho for the Equality Act about a quarter of a century ago were gung-ho for a different act, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. They voted for it in an overwhelming majority in the U.S. Senate. And now they're gung-ho for the Equality Act, which would essentially gut the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. How can this be? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, March the 3rd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry Mattingly will join us to talk about media coverage of the Equality Act. We'll spend some time with Mark Tooley, author of the book Taking Back the United Methodist Church, about a proposed split in the United Methodist Church. We'll discuss new civics in the public school classroom with Joy Pullman of The Federalist, and Dr. John Bombara will discuss scientism and superstition with us. He's author of a column for the latest issue of the Lutheran Witness magazine titled In the Saddle of Jesus. Joining us to discuss media coverage of the Equality Act, Terry Mattingly. He's senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Have you read many national news stories about the Equality Act that mention the Senate's 97-3 passage of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act passed almost exactly 28 years ago today?
Well, when I first started reading about this, I'd say 10 days ago or so, I wasn't seeing anyone mentioning it. And then eventually, one or two references, primarily at National Public Radio, crept in that there was going to be an impact on RFRA. And I've seen, you know, several people, I mean, and the verb is very ironic, but you can't get around it. Some people have been very blunt in stating RFRA trumps the Religious Freedom Restoration Act in many, many, many circumstances. And where the line gets drawn is a crucial issue that reporters need to be asking, but they're not asking it. I've seen also references to it watering down RFRA. But what we're not seeing is coverage that actually goes to institutions, religious institutions that will be affected by the bill, and simply asking, how will this affect you? You know, what are your lawyers telling you could happen? I mean, and the crucial battle line in this, there's two. One is the how this would affect individuals. I mean, if you were, for say, a Roman Catholic doctor and you did not feel you could take part in a complete affirmative response to someone, a 13 or 14-year-old person or younger coming in and saying that, well, don't tell my parents or anything, but I believe I have gender dysphoria and that I'm trans. Would a doctor there not only be able to say no, but could a doctor in the current environment even say, wait a minute, under decades of research by Johns Hopkins and the experts on transsexual activity, behavior, surgery, therapy, et cetera, under normal treatment of gender dysphoria, you don't meet any of the criteria. So I would like to slow this down. In other words, even if you made a non-religious argument for saying no, if you made an argument based on what was liberalism just a decade or so ago, that may even be off the table at this point, as we're seeing in some of the debates on Capitol Hill related to trans issues. So you have the individuals. This is the flower shop owners, the wedding photographers, the Colorado bake shop, etc. At what point do individuals in businesses, now that's the crucial word, businesses, at what point do they lose any rights that under RFRA, there was a religious, not a complete blanket exemption, but you could take a RFRA argument to court and make a case that there was a difference between selling someone a wedding cake and creating an artistic wedding cake that explicitly contains same-sex content in terms of symbolism and advocacy or wordings or something like that. RFRA was something that you could use as a way to mediate this conflict in the public square. And well, a lot of people are admitting that's gone now. But that isn't the issue that most concerns me right now in terms of what I'm not seeing in the coverage. And that's simply, okay, what about religious institutions that are not strictly for members of a specific religious congregation? What about parachurch ministries? What about religious nonprofits? What about doctrinally defined schools that still open up their enrollment to the public if the public's willing to sign a doctrinal covenant? But you don't have to be a member of that denomination to attend that school. In some sense, you're a public institution, or you're accommodating the public. What about Catholic hospitals? What about clinics run by religious groups? What about a homeless shelter that is run by a religious group, the Roman Catholic Church, the Assemblies of God, or whoever, and they have a male shelter and a female shelter? Do those terms apply now in terms of, DNA, birth definition of gender, versus self-identified concepts of gender? It's that second group that I really think people need to be looking for, because if you're a reporter in the United States of America, the odds that you live in an urban or even suburban or even small town zip code that does not contain a religious ministry for the poor, a homeless ministry, a Catholic school, a Missouri Synod Lutheran school, an evangelical college, whatever. The fact very few people live in areas where those kinds of groups do not exist. That's the question. How does this law apply to them, as well as to Christians who work in or who run businesses or corporations as normally defined? Do you see the distinction I'm making there between doctrinally defined parachurch groups versus businesses? It's the same thing that we saw in the healthcare battles and everywhere else. But the Equality Act settles it. It appears, at least based on what I'm reading.
As I read it, under the Equality Act, an entity couldn't even use RFRA to challenge the Act's provisions, nor could it use RFRA as a defense to a claim that's made under that Act. It specifically mentions RFRA, saying you can't use it in these cases. So what I want to know is, shouldn't someone in the media ask Senator Chuck Schumer, who co-sponsored RFRA so long ago, to explain how he went from being a co-sponsor to now being a major supporter for the Equality Act that specifically says RFRA is essentially now toothless.
Well, before we get to that, I want to back up to one other word that you just used that went zooming past us. We'll come back to the 97-3 vote and everything else in a minute. You just used an interesting word. You said an entity could not. Somewhere out there in media land, there's an FAQ floating around with the word entity in it, and it's showing up. NPR is where I've seen it. I think I saw it in a New York Times story the other day. But this, the entity, as opposed to the business or the corporation. Entity is like a word you can drive trucks through. It's so vague. And it's that vagueness as to what organizations and what are the characteristics of an organization that, to which this law would apply. That's the very point that I think journalists should be interested in if they want to know how this will affect institutions within 50 miles of their newsroom. So that word entity and the fact you read it that way, you've seen that as well as I have. That's the whole point of this discussion. And that's the very issue that we're not seeing covered. Now, to back the truck up even further, you're asking what happened to the liberal and conservative coalition that existed in the Bill Clinton-Al Gore era that made Bill Clinton enthusiastic about signing this bill, which was introduced in the House by Chuck Schumer and the late Ted Kennedy in the Senate, and it got a 97-3 vote in the U.S. Senate. What changed? Well, the easy answer to that is to say America changed. And what changed America was primarily Hollywood, public schools, and everything else making a complete about face, first of all, on sexuality and the sexual revolution in general, the kind of the religion of the 60s, moving up the scale to where it becomes mainstream America's basic view of human experience. But then you'd have to say that same-sex marriage changed everything. And now, clearly, with same-sex marriage being actively affirmed at the Supreme Court, we're still having some battles over that. But clearly, gender dysphoria and trans issues have emerged as the point on the spear at this point that's driving all of this. And, I mean, you can hardly go anywhere right now in terms of popular culture or media and not see material that is related to this. But I think, and this gets us into situations that I think a lot of Republicans and a lot of conservative people don't want to talk about. The real issue here is the degree to which corporate America changed on these issues. At the level of the human relations departments of businesses and corporations. I mean, when you have an organization, a business the size of Walmart coming out of the Bible Belt and helping redefine small town America and everything, and all of a sudden Walmart, as well as Target and whatever else, is now lobbying state governments not to pass state versions of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. That's a sea change. Our friend Rod Dreher has noted that for him, what really woke him up on all of these issues was the battle in Indiana a number of years ago, when it suddenly became very apparent that corporate America, with all of that money that gives to Republicans, not Democrats, Republicans, that when corporate America switched on the Religious Freedom Restoration Act at the state levels, that meant the entire thing was kind of up for grabs at the national level, which means, yes, this is headed to the Supreme Court eventually. The issue is, to what degree can private businesses, I mean, like when we argue about Amazon getting to ban books about transsexual issues that are hate speech, we get into the freedom of what corporations can do and what they can't do, and what monopolies can do and what they can't do. I don't know where the court will come down on the issue of a major corporation saying, we're going to follow this as our policy. I mean, once again, forget government for a second. Just think about the impact on individuals if it affected just businesses. Then the second half of the equation for me in that word entity is, how does this apply to doctrinally defined religious nonprofits? And at that point, I'm stunned at the almost complete silence that we're hearing out of major religious groups in America, other than posting up an FAQ of why they oppose the act on their website. We're not seeing an awareness of how this would affect their institutions as much, from the Roman Catholic Church to some degree even the Southern Baptist Convention. The group that's been most active on all of this and kind of out front in working on this has been the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which you and I in the past have talked about the Utah Compromise on the bills that were passed in Utah as an attempt to kind of get to some middle ground and pass something that's pro-LGBTQ but explicitly defends religious liberty. In other words, a kind of a both and. Let's try to defend the rights of people on both sides of that tolerance issue. That's the Utah Compromise. And in Congress, that has been the Fairness for All Act, has been the kind of compromise piece of legislation. But the Fairness for All Act has some critics on the political and cultural right, but it's being totally blown out of the water by the moral and cultural left. And, you know, you're not going to see big tech supporting the Fairness for All Act. They're going to go for the Equality Act.
We're talking with Terry Mattingly about media coverage of the Equality Act. He's senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi and founder and editor of Get Religion. When we come back, I want to come back to why there is such ringing silence from those church leaders on the Equality Act. You can meet and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Robert George, Brian Wolfmiller, Larry Rast, and Will Wheaton at the 2021 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Making the Case is Friday, July 23rd and Saturday, July 24th at Concordia University, Chicago. Early bird registration is $135. Learn more at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. Making the Case, July 23rd and 24th in Chicago.
Jesus said, I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. This is Monica Shannon, Life Coordinator for the Southern Illinois District Advocates for Life. We invite you to join your brothers and sisters in Christ for a peaceful, life-affirming prayer vigil from 10 to 11, Saturday morning, March 20th at Planned Parenthood in Fairview Heights, Illinois. For more information, visit SID Advocates for Life.com. SIDAdvocatesforlife.com.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you ever wished you could see Ad Crucem's products before buying them? Well, now you can. Ad Crucem has opened our brand new workshop in Littleton, Colorado. Come visit us and watch how we make our Christmas ornaments. Check out the quality and fabric of our church banners, or choose some greeting cards, posters, icons, or jewelry. Of course, if you can't make it to Colorado, we are still open online. For details or directions, visit adcrucem.com. That's ADC. RUCEM.com.
Do you know any military veterans in your church or community? Do you have a passion to support and reach them with the gospel of Jesus Christ? Then Operation Barnabas is for you. Called by Christ's love, Operation Barnabas engages, empowers, and equips LCMS faith communities to provide hope, healing, and support to military-connected persons living in their community. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about media coverage of the Equality Act with Terry Mattingly. He's senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. So, Terry, I'm curious, why have we heard, I'm wording this very carefully, why have we heard from so few religious leaders warning about the consequences of the Equality Act?
And even more importantly, why are we not seeing symbolic actions by major religious leaders on this issue? You would think with the stakes as high as they are for Catholic hospitals, clinics and stuff, that you would see a demonstration at the front fence of the White House right now by people wearing the vestments of bishops, archbishops, and even cardinals on this point. You would think that we would be seeing major activity among religious conservatives, among Protestants, trying to get the attention of the major networks and stuff to discuss this. And my theory is that they simply don't think this can pass the Senate. And thus, they don't want to burn capital with the Biden administration. They don't want to make a fuss because they feel that they know this bill can't pass in the Senate. And then that raises another issue directly out of that. Would Biden, President Biden, make this the issue on which Democrats in the Senate, with the vice president as the tie-breaking vote, would they make this the issue on which they would attack the Senate filibuster and try to get to the 50 vote, the 51 vote, instead of needing 60-61 to bust a filibuster? At that point, you then would have to ask how many Republicans are willing to stand up to corporate America at this point. They're normal buddies in the country club world. How many of them are willing to stand up to corporate America to take on this issue? Now, if you look carefully, there's a National Public Radio piece out there called House Passes the Equality Act. Here's what that would do. Down in there, there's a couple of other interesting details. You look at it, it kind of tells you what's going on. Let me just read you one section of that piece. The Senate is more uncertain. Democrats in the Senate broadly support the bill. Senators Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona and Joe Manchin of West Virginia, among the most moderate Democratic senators, signed a letter in support of it last year. That's true, but Manchin also made very clear that he had questions about the bill, specifically on whether it would cause chaos in public schools. And I would assume that if he says that about public schools, he probably knows there are other issues. But here's the key part. The bill would need 60 votes to avoid a filibuster in the Senate. Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins co-sponsored the bill in 2019, but none of her fellow more moderate Republicans are on board. Utah Mitt Romney, for example, told the Washington Blade that he won't support the act, citing religious liberty. So Collins becomes a crucial figure here, and whether moderate Republicans would abandon the Equality Act if it doesn't include the kinds of protections for religious liberty that is over in that other bill, the Fairness for All Act. What would be really interesting here is if Biden, seeing that this was not going to pass the Senate, what happens if Joe Biden endorses the Fairness for All Act? Is there a potential here for a bipartisan compromise that leaves RFRA in play or leads protections for religious liberty that are clearly not contradicting RFRA puts those into play. That's really the key right now. While everybody focuses on those one or two moderately conservative Democrats, really the ball is in the court of the Republicans here on the degree to which they're going to fight this and oppose this. And I'd stress again, there are quite a few Democrats who have to run for office in states that are not bright blue. And some of these senators and representatives and others, some of them are Roman Catholics. For all I know, some of them are Missouri Synod Lutherans. Some of them are Baptists. Where are religious institutions on this in terms of getting to the level of the local church? I bet if you walked into most churches right now and said, what is your church saying about the Equality Act? Most of them would say, huh? There's no fervor on this. My prediction is that these religious leaders assume that they're safe in the Senate.
The journalist has the responsibility to ask the question. And I'm wondering whether or not we're not hearing from these religious leaders because no one is asking them.
Well, religious leaders can ask the questions on their own through symbolic action and symbolic speech. Trust me, if a couple of cardinals chain themselves to the front fence of the White House, it will be covered by somebody. I would say at this point, journalists have a larger responsibility to say, how does this apply to institutions in the area surrounding my newsroom? How does this apply to our Catholic hospital? How does this apply to our local Christian classical schools? How does this apply to that very large Christian university that already has had a battle about a trans student in dormitories? How does this apply to them, since lawyers have already argued? I'm referring now to a case with a large Christian Baptist school in California. Already, the lawyers on the other side argued, look, you're open to enrollment from pretty much whoever wants to come. You're a Baptist school, but clearly you're dealing with the public. You're saying anybody can apply to come here that wants to. Why are you not accommodating this student who was fine with you as a freshman when you admitted this person, but now that the person has changed his or her gender identity, all of a sudden, you're not so sure what dorm this person can apply to live in. Why are you not accommodating this person's needs? That was in California, I think, 5 or 6 years ago. There are other cases out there. We've all watched the LGBTQ battles concerning Catholic schools, teachers, enrollments, etc., and policies. Journalists should know at this point that this is a local, regional, and national story. The crucial issue is, why are they not seeing that it is a local story that should be covered by their newsrooms?
Shouldn't the media ask, kind of coming back around here, how RFRA passed 97-3 in the U.S. Senate in 1993, and it's unlikely that even one Democrat will vote against the Equality Act in the U.S. Senate?
They don't know that RFRA exists. This is another one of those classic issues where everything depends on whether or not you have an experienced religion beat professional in a newsroom who can raise that issue. I just know from my own experience over the last decade or two when I have asked that question, journalists don't even know what RFRA is. And if they've heard of RFRA, they've heard it defined by battles like the Indiana case, like the case with the Final Four not going to North Carolina if it passed its own version of RFRA. They've heard it identified only as, oh, that's the bill those bigoted religious people want so that they can discriminate against LGBTQ people. And they know nothing about the origins of RFRA in a bill that was endorsed by everybody from the Assemblies of God to the Unitarians as a bill to protect religious liberty for everyone. And it's been used over and over in the defense of Muslims and small religious groups and Native American religion and Orthodox Jews in prison to have a right to a kosher diet and all of these other applications. They don't know any of that back history. They don't know what the bill's actually been used for. All they know is, oh, yeah, I mean, even Target and Walmart and everybody else, let alone Apple and Amazon and the people that really matter, they opposed that in Indiana. That's a religious right thing. So why would we want to defend those institutions or even ask questions on behalf of those institutions in our own city, in our own region? I think it's just that clear.
So if it actually passes and is signed by President Biden, what responsibility does the media have to educate the general public about what it's going to mean for religious freedom?
Well, initial law cases will be covered when people begin using it against homeless shelters and against Catholic hospitals and against whatever. And this will all be, of course, the following people's rights have been violated, and they're using this new law to make sure that religious believers are not allowed to discriminate against Americans. But somewhere, people will already be looking for the cases that will end up going up the chain of the courts to the U.S. Supreme Court. This will end up in the court because the court has already said, in the case on both gay marriage and in the case on trans rights, the Supreme Court decisions by the majority have all said, we know that there are religious liberty implications here that will have to come back to the court. Which once again points to the U.S. Supreme Court as the most powerful institution in American life. And that's not how the founders intended it to be. They thought we would work these things out in legislatures and find compromises that tried to please as many people as possible on both sides. But it all ends up at the court, with the court being able to tell Americans what they have to do. And you can't look at the last 25 years of American life without seeing the impact that has had on public discourse and even on journalism, as we've become a Supreme Court-obsessed culture.
Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks.
Glad to be here.
Mark Tooley will be with us on the other side of the break. We're going to talk with him about the formation of a new Methodist church, the Global Methodist Church, a split from the United Methodist Church. Stay tuned.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
What does it mean to live the Christian life? Reaching out in mercy to our neighbors, receiving our Lord's gifts in worship, and proclaiming His truth to the world. The Lutheran Church Extension Fund comes alongside churches and individuals to help them live out this beautiful Christian life every day. This year, we have a ripe opportunity to bring Christ to a hurting world. Discover the role you can play in this great work. Call 800-843-5233 or visit lcef.org.
I'm Pastor Watson. Are you tired of entertainment and in need of the peace that passes human understanding? I invite you to Augsburg Lutheran Church in Shawnee, Kansas, to receive the gifts of Jesus. Augsburg is scriptural, traditional, historical, sacramental, and reverent. The Church of the Apostles, the Councils, and the Reformers wants to be your church family also. For more information, visit us at augsburglutheranchurch.org.
Superstition is the belief that one event caused an unrelated event. It's often tied up with false beliefs about God and how He works in the world. Is there really such a problem with superstitions? Is there really such a problem with saying knock on wood or good luck? Explore this and more in the March issue of The Lutheran Witness. We will talk about scientism, superstition, New Age, and so much more. To order your copy, visit cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by becoming an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor. Ascension Lutheran, Niles, Illinois. Christ Our Savior Lutheran, Freeburg, Illinois. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Marshall, Minnesota. Hope Lutheran, Spokane Valley, Washington. Messiah Lutheran, Keller, Texas. Our Savior Lutheran, Louisville, Kentucky. Redeemer Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska. St. John Lutheran, New Berlin, Illinois. St. Paul Lutheran, International Falls, Minnesota. And Trinity Lutheran, Okmulgee, Oklahoma. Find out how your confessional Lutheran church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Support, Donate, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes an Issues Etc. sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal.